In the studio, I've got Crystal from the Karioi Project. Good morning.
Good morning.
The Oi chicks have hatched, have they?
They have, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
They just started hatching a month ago when I talked to you?
Yeah. I think we just had our first one then, hadn't we?
Yeah. So do you have a count?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's never an exact count because some burrows are hard to tell. And sometimes we haven't even found a burrow. Sometimes we find them much later. But at the moment, we've got about 16.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that feel good?
It's pretty standard, actually. Yeah. It's probably not that different. Like, I think the saddest thing is, like, over this last month, we see a lot of burrows fail. And especially in areas where we don't have the predator control in place.
So when you say the burrow fails, it means something got in, a predator got in?
Not necessarily. It is a mixture of things. It's like whether the parents come back with food, you know, the resilience of the chick, but it could also be predators. And in some of the areas where we have the least amount of predator control, they do seem to fail much faster.
Yeah, or could just be stressful.
Yeah.
More stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah, being in that environment.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so and what about little blue penguins? Because we know that they've been around. Are they happening?
Yeah,
this,
we've seen them pop up on the camera. I haven't seen them in nests yet. I'm catching up with Georgia today, who's our seabird ranger.
Are they likely to be down the beach? Is that where they always are?
Yeah, so we have actually picked up a dead one on the beach, which was a bit sad, because they're obviously coming up and down the beach every night, so they're really vulnerable, especially to dogs, actually, because dogs will see them on the beach and go for them. So another good reason not to let your dog chase
birds.
Yeah,
that's a big message at the moment, this time of year especially.
Yeah.
Do they nest around, like, I'm thinking of Te Toto Gorge, which might be a safer place for them to nest? Do they go and nest?
Yeah, we haven't done a lot of work there. Like, we'll probably do more coastal work over the coming year, like just working with landowners around the coast that are keen to have more predator control. But we haven't done a search for little blues in that area.
Yeah.
But it's very likely that they will be using some nesting sites there, and they do pop up in different places. Like, they're not as stuck to one area, like the grey-faced petrel. Like, they will come back to an area, but like the burrows kind of come and go because just like with the storms we've had, a lot of the burrows get wiped out because their nesting sites are really low down near the beach.
And then we've had a lot of beach erosion in the last few years as well, so they'll be super vulnerable.
We've literally had like nests that we've known about that have just collapsed and been washed away.
Yeah.
And then the birds come back and have to make a new one.
The place where the nest used to be is now up in the air.
Yeah.
Like the actual physical location.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So really changing environment. And luckily, most of our grey-faced petrel burrows are in safer places when they're a little bit higher up especially. But we do have one site that's on the south end of the beach, and that's really collapsing down. And we've looked at whether we can protect it in some way with planting and that, but it's just going to go. So we're looking probably at numerous burrows that will collapse over the coming years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although the I've talked with Stacey from Coast Care and Angeline Greensill and Shaw Mead from eCoast, and the sand will come back. Like, it comes and goes. It's just not a perpetual thing that we're eroding.
Yeah. And yeah. But it's not the sand where they're burrowing. It's kind of just more into that bush line.
Right. But if the sand builds back up, it'll prevent the waves from getting up there.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so much.
Yeah. This particular site, I think it will collapse. And it's kind of where the trees are, and it's just slowly eroding away. Like, it's not happening really fast. But the area where we're going in now is just only just accessible to us. Whereas before, we could just climb up in there.
Okay.
Quite easily.
And you want to be careful getting up there now because you make it worse, wouldn't you? Like, clamping around?
It's probably not going to make it worse. If it's that vulnerable, it would be collapsing with us. You know, like, it's kind of part of the cliff face where all the vegetation already is, and they kind of tucked in there into burrows. So it's not the really erodible kind of the beachy sand,
yeah,
but it's further up there. But because the beach sand that, you know, underneath it's kind of getting ground out, eventually the kind of cliff collapses.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell by the shape of the landscape there that that's history. Yeah. That's what's happening.
Kind of like where that lookout is too, you know, how docks close that track where the lookout is above the beach.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, just if you go down Earl's Place into Bryant Track, there's that little lookout. And we used to sit there all the time watching Oi come in at night.
Yeah.
And now there's a sign up, like, because you can see where it's all eroded away on the cliff. Quite high up, and so they're not trusting it. So there's that kind of real subtle kind of erosion happening on the, you know, kind of on the actual land side of the beach. Yeah.
Okay. So there was a post this morning on Facebook on the notice board. Someone asking about if they went pig hunting on the mountain, would there be toxins in the pig that they should be concerned about? I think that's my summary. I read it very quickly, so I might have that slightly wrong, but it does raise an interesting question. Because toxic substances are often used to get pests, to eradicate pests from parts of New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And you guys are in the business of eradicating pests.
Yeah.
So you don't use 1080, do you?
No.
Is just anybody allowed to use 1080?
No. It's you got to have certification, license, to use it. Yeah.
But I don't think you guys were ever interested in using it.
No, it's definitely a tool that obviously is used by DOC, and it has been used on Karioi, but it hasn't for quite a few years now.
Yeah.
And part of the reason for that is actually that DOC has pulled the National Fund for Predator Control that DOC has been pulled from Karioi, so we don't actually get it anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so...
Was that because they're like, oh, we've just got to make cutbacks, or was it because they saw people doing stuff here and they thought, oh, we don't need to anymore?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mixture. So in the past, you could get DOC funding, and the fact that the community was invested could get you higher up the list. But now they've got a new ranking system, and Karioi's off, you know, not in the top 800 or whatever it is. So, so they have this prioritization kind of
top 800.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, locations, and we're sitting at 900 and something. So we got bumped off the list, which means there's just no national allocation of funding for Karioi, which perhaps for some people sounds like a positive thing, because then they're like, yay, no 1080, but it means that literally. There is no money allocated by DOC to really do much on Karioi.
So it wasn't just 1080 that's...
Well, the money is spent on 1080 because that's the best that DOC can do in terms of their funding availability. Yeah. And that's the most effective thing they think they can use on the mountain when they can only come back every so many years and to give it a good knockback to protect the canopy.
Yeah.
That's their main... It's not to bring birds back or anything. It's just to protect canopy. And get the possum numbers down enough for a few more years again so that the bush can recover. We don't get that funding anymore, or Karioi doesn't get that funding anymore. And so that means that it's left completely up to us. The kind of silver lining of that is that the DOC local office, the Waikato office, does support us still. And when they can, they will help fund as... you know, some of our work, as well as provide technical support and staff to help do some of that work. So when we do bait operations ourselves, which we do now, they'll come and help us. So yeah, sounds you're starting to look confused.
What's a different bait?
Yeah, so we use different baits. So a few years ago, we got funding and we started setting up a bait network to help with the eventual translocation of potential forest birds like kaka or North Island robin. So part of that is doing large-scale intensive pest control. And to do that well, we had to look beyond just using the traps, because rat control and possum control with only traps is pretty challenging.
Yeah.
So we've set up a bait station network, so covering about 700 hectares on the eastern part of the mountain, and we're trialing kind of what it takes to get the numbers down low enough for us to be successful in having an introduction of particular species.
So what is the bait?
So we use a different range of baits, and they usually they're not as lethal. So you don't need a handling certificate, but you need repeated doses usually. So they're things like difenoconazole and cholecalciferol. Or pendone.
Yeah, I know what those words mean exactly. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Don't worry, I need to look at it.
I mean, they could equally be things you get from the chemist downtown, right?
Yeah,
names like that. We just don't really know what they mean.
Yeah, so they're kind of things that, you know, if you had a rat problem around your house or a possum problem, and you wanted to go and get some bait, you could get those things kind of off the shelf at the supermarket or at a farmlands or something.
Okay.
So they commonly use. They're not brodificum, which is often used by council around on private land, but we can't that word use it on dock land.
I saw that word used in one of the comments on this Facebook post.
So the biggest thing with toxins is that some of them, the way they act, so how much does an animal need to eat of the toxin, and then also how persistent it is in the tissue of the animal, whether if an animal eats it, dies, and another animal comes along and eats it, scavenges it, does it bioaccumulate into that next animal? So the more you eat of it, the more it goes into the next animal.
So and, what's the answer to that?
So say for brodificum, which the council uses, bioaccumulation and persistence is quite high. On dockland, that's why they're not using it and don't allow it. So we don't use that. And so the toxins we've been using are... they biodegrade in the environment much more quickly, but it also means that the animal has to eat a lot more of the toxin to have a kill.
So the one the council's using actually it persists more than 1080?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 1080 will break down eventually.
Yeah, 1080 does break down quite quickly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the research I've read.
Okay. It's all – there's a lot in that. Like there's – there's a lot to understand about it, like how intense it is, how it affects other animals, does it bioaccumulate, and if we eat a pig off the mountain, are any of those chemicals going to be in the pig? Pigs will eat anything, won't they? Will they eat carcasses?
Well, pigs are interesting, and I'm definitely no expert, and there'll be people that understand this a lot better, but pigs do scavenge, and they will eat carcasses and that. But in saying that, they also really resilient to toxins. And so when a pig eats and scavenges carcasses that have toxins in, they often regurgitate and throw up.
Oh, okay.
So they're often the toxins won't kill them, but it could still end up in their tissue. And so what we have is a holding period on toxins, like when toxins go out. So if you go to a forest and you see a sign up and it says we've used this toxin, which is what we're required to do at every entryway onto the mountain, public entryway, then you can look up that toxin and look what the holding period is. So if you can see that we've been doing a bait op, you know, like say this week, and that toxin's gone out, then you can say, oh, there's a holding period of say 3 months. And so we monitor carcasses as well, like how quickly they decompose, and so we know when it becomes safe again.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of rules like that. So if you're a hunter or you go into the bush and you're concerned and you see those signs, then you can look that up and see what a holding period is. And that's the kind of stuff that you need to be aware of when you go out into any New Zealand forest, actually.
Yeah, sounds like it. So have we just discussed that the council is putting bait on the mountain? We see the council uses that one that starts with B.
Oh, brodificum. So the council, regional council does the edges. So they work on private land. And that's part of their TB control program as well. So partly for biodiversity, but also the council has often worked on farmland all around the region to reduce the, you know, TB.
Mm.
And to reduce TB in cows, you need to address possum problems. So that's where a lot of the funding's come from for possum control in the past, is actually to control the spread of TB, not for biodiversity.
There's a lot of effort going on just to hold the line in terms of the ecosystem. It was like the ecosystem won't die, but it would change drastically. to something else if this work didn't happen.
Yeah. So the positive thing for us is when council does this work is that a lot of possums are actually found on the edges of forests, and they go into the grass and burrow and eat the grass and not just in the trees.
People find them on their farms. So,
yeah. So all those little bush plots all around the mountain, all that private land, you know, like from basically all, you know, around the mountain as well as all the way to Aotea and, you know, the whole area, like probably 20,000 hectares of land around the mountain, like is farmland, but it's got a huge amount of bush. And you go into one of those little bush blocks, and you, if you started trapping or whatever, you might pull out 30 possums in that one little bush batch. Or if you just look for possums on the edge of the forest, like you might pick up 60, 70, like, which is what we've had, like with hunters.
Yeah.
They've just gone out with the night goggles and they'll shoot 60, 70 possums in a night easy, if not more. So that work means that the reinvasion of possums onto the mountain is hugely reduced.
Yeah.
And that's what holds the line as well. So we can do all the work we could possibly do on the mountain, but if you don't do that edge work, you're kind of fighting a even more losing battle. So it's a bit of a hand-in-hand process where, like, DOC will support as much as they can or as little at the moment. You know, they can only doing so much on Karioi. We do our bit, and regional council does their bit. And by kind of having that collaborative approach with each of the different agencies and the community working together, we can do the best that we possibly can.
So given that DOC's not doing 1080 drops, and say if you guys didn't exist, then eventually, from what you said before, we would lose the canopy in the forest?
Oh, yeah. Everything would be gone. Yeah, quickly.
I've seen aerial photographs of the bush in the Waitakere Ranges, I think. I think that's where I saw the photo from, where that was happening.
Yeah.
And it obviously looks like it's decaying. So there must be other places in this country that's happening too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's quite sobering, really. Like, And you're fighting for your patch to get some funding, you know. So it's a hard one. Of course,
1080 is highly controversial. A lot of people don't want it used for fairly obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and especially for people, I think the aerial application of 1080 is really contentious, and that's really understandable. I mean, we don't. You know, we're a community project, so we represent all those voices and all those different opinions. You know, we're not trying to make people think one way or the other. We kind of respect that. But the reality is, for us, like doing the ground control that we're doing, it's a huge amount of money. It's a huge amount of volunteer effort. So we've got probably about 30 volunteers going up tomorrow to fill bait stations.
Yeah.
And then in less than 2 months, we have to go back there and clear those bait stations. We've done numerous bait station fills this winter already, and it's a huge amount of effort.
And still the traps as well?
Yeah, so we do the traps as well, and that's just on that 700 hectares. And, you know, we haven't even covered the whole mountain, and we're unlikely to be able to really do those peaks, the really steep areas, well. So the reality of doing ground control, the amount of effort and money it takes, and then to kind of see what results you get, like it's been really an interesting process for us, like deciding where to put effort, how do we do this well. So like we just monitored the area that we're treating at the moment, and we've got down to 7% of possums, which is awesome. We got down to 22 on rats, 22%. From our monitoring, so
you want to be zero though, don't you? Don't you want to be zero?
So it just shows like we've had repeated bait station fills, repeated, you know, big groups of volunteers, lots of logistics to organize all that, lots of preparation from the team. This is our third time in, I think, this winter, or fourth time, sorry, I can't remember now. And it takes all that effort, and that's our result. And now we have to go in again to try and get the rat numbers down even more. And part of the reason why we're doing that right now in spring is to give the birds the best breeding chance possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we'll go back in summer and see what our results look like then. So we keep monitoring to see what our impact is. And then on top of that, we're also trapping, we're shooting, leg hole trapping. We're doing everything possible to get, you know, everything out.
Yeah.
And you so talk it's about, really interesting you talk like about how the, much effort it takes.
Yeah, yeah. And you talk about the top of the mountain. Like, I actually was up there a few weeks ago. I've never been up the top. And, yeah, you're inside the cone of a volcano. Like, there's vertical walls and it's crazy. So, yeah. The opposite of a football field.
Yeah. So there's a reason. And it's just Karioi, like a small mountain. Like, this is 2,000 hectares, like max. You know, you're talking Porongi is like 18,000 hectares.
Yeah, that's the daddy of the two of them.
And then, and then you got Mangatauatara. Yeah, obviously that's got a fence. But, you know, and then you can imagine scaling that up to like the massive forest tracts that we have at Porirua and, you know, like all in the South Island. Like the scale of kind of the effort that's required. And I guess then realistically, why wouldn't you want to use a helicopter?
You know what I mean?
Like,
yeah, we can see the logistics of it.
So it becomes like, and I'm not trying to convince anyone, but it's just when you're in this work and you're doing it step by step, every 100 meters, you know, doing the work, then you're like, whoa, this is massive.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and then it brings back to the answer, like, you know, I'm being a bit contentious now, but it's the questions we ask ourselves. Do we want birds in our forests? And if we don't have those birds in our forest, how is the trees going to survive? And so it just all kind of cascades down to, you know, a very sad story if we don't do this work.
And that thing, the thing you said about right at the start about the reason Doc uses 1080 is their objective is to protect the canopy. That's the primary objective. Like, I haven't even heard that mentioned. The discussions, 1080 is one of those ones where the discussions turn rabid pretty quickly. But that's just important to know that when you're considering the big picture with that.
And again,
I'm not saying either way. I'm just saying you got to know this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we got to understand it.
Yeah, and there'll be certain trees that are really impacted by possums and they'll get stripped down and bare and then the wind comes in. So trees get defoliated, they get eaten. Then the wind comes in and breaks them down and then you get gaps and then that's how the forest slowly gets destroyed.
Uh-huh.
So it's not the simple process. It's kind of this process that happens over time.
So
it's a hard one and I fully respect, like, I know some people don't like it. I understand why they don't like it, but coming up with alternative solutions, you know, is hard. And the interesting thing is now that we've got this predator free 2050, you know, goal for New Zealand, is the tools that are actually still available to us as a community, whether we use traps or toxins, haven't changed that much yet. So even though all this money is going into research and finding alternative ways of doing it, like they haven't really trickled down to a really affordable way for us to do it. So we've just got this new trap out that's a self-setting trap, but it's $500 each for a trap.
Oh, you know, so the reality. How many traps do you have on the mountain at the moment?
Like several thousands.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's still easier for us to have volunteers checking those traps than buying all these really expensive traps.
Yeah.
And often, like, and then we do our own kind of monitoring on those traps, and we put a camera on them, and we see how they trap. And then next thing we see possums sitting on the traps with not going into the traps. And then you're like, ah.
They're just like, yeah.
How do we do this better?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, so if people have good, you know, good suggestions, we're always open to them. But I guess I'm just trying to put a picture. I'm not trying to say one or the other, but I'm trying to put a framework in place. Like, these are the questions going through our heads. There's no easy answers. And some people will say to me, Crystal, you're never going to get anywhere. But you have got somewhere already.
So that's not true.
And then the other people are like, yay, you know, we're seeing the birds come back. So we get all sorts, you know, and everything in between. And so I'm just kind of saying, you know, to this community, like, yeah, what do we want? And then you have to kind of work down from there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Crystal, thanks heaps for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right, folks, we're going to be talking to the crew from Freedom to Fly about some big events happening this November in just a moment. Stand by for that.